BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello. It was only a few months ago that we told you that the charity Guide Dogs faced a £20 million funding gap by 2026 unless cuts to staff and services were made. We also know that many local voluntary organisations have had to reduce their services as donations are falling and volunteers aren't returning after COVID. And now we're hearing that the Royal National Institute of Blind People, which describes itself as the leading charity offering information, support and advice to the UK's visually impaired population, is itself facing serious financial problems. We understand that staff have been told that the organisation has to make cuts of millions of pounds. The estimates we've heard have varied between just over 6 and 10 million, and that redundancies are inevitable. So what is going on in the blind sector and what are the implications for visually impaired people as a whole in terms of services and support? I'm joined by the RNIB CEO, Matt Stringer. Matt, first of all, before we talk more about the implications of all this, tell us what's going on. What is the size of the funding gap and what are its implications?
First of all, just to say, you know, the RNIB, we believe, are generating some great impact actually out in society at the moment. And this programme we've announced to the organisation is about moving the organisation on to really be able to optimise and deliver for blind and partially sighted people in the UK. We've seen, you know, recent strong performance on things like our ticket office closure campaign. And you know, we're very pleased with the campaign we've run around accessible voting, for example, during the general election. And we've acted as a convener to bring together sort of charities and the Royal Colleges and the NHS across the devolved nations to work really well together on the eye health pathway. So,
but that's campaigning, Chief Executive. That's campaigning. We're talking about finance, and you can't do any of those things to the same standard if you're in financial trouble.
No, agreed. So, I mean, what we're trying to do is move the organisation on to be one that really tries to push those things I've mentioned and really make a difference out in UK society for all blind and partially sighted people. To the core of your question on the finances, you know, we're an organisation that turns over just under about 100 million. That's the size of the RNIB. And yes, you're right. We're looking to take about 10% of the costs out. About 55% of our costs are related to people and about 45% of our costs are related to sort of non-people. So we'll be looking to make a saving of about 10 million on that size.
And that figure that you just given me of your income, you said just under 100, it was over 100 four or five years ago. It's been falling steadily, hasn't it, your income?
Only because we've changed the organisation in moving out of regulated services, actually. So, you know, we had an amount of money that came in for the regulated services we offered, and we basically spent as much money as came in on those regulated services. So when we...
Sorry, that's a bit jargony. Can you define regulated services for that?
Yeah. So out of the statutory inquiry, part of what we did there was to move out of running care homes and schools and a college. And you know, we sold out of all those about 3 or 4 years ago. So those are the things we stopped doing coming out of the statutory inquiry. And as I say, we had money coming in for those and we had money going out being spent on those. So stopping doing those meant that clearly we didn't have the income coming in, but equally we didn't have the costs of running those services. So that's why you've seen a fall off from the RNIB of being over 100 million 3 or 4 years ago to being about 93 million at the moment.
But I mean, I can understand why there'd be an initial impact of that, but this has been falling steadily. And that sounds as if it may not stop, unless you can convince me otherwise.
Well, you know, generating income is tough, you know, full stop at the moment. I think we're not immune as a charity from seeing challenges with generating income. The economy externally is tough. You know, we're not the only organisation who's finding it difficult to generate income. Our income projections this year are actually flat, and, you know, a quarter into the year we're on plan. So, you know, we're not actually hemorrhaging income. We're about level on the year, and we've got plans to try and grow that actually over the next few years. But it's not easy. And I think, you know, people will look outside and find that we're working in very difficult times economically, socially, geopolitically. You know, we're not immune from those pressures as the RNIB. And we need to sort of frame our response and set ourselves up to be here for many years to come. As you said at the top of the item, supporting blind and partially sighted people across the UK, you know, with a full panoply of services that, you know, they currently enjoy from the RNIB.
Right. Well, I'll come back to the issue of how you generate more income, but can we talk about the implications? First of all, to your staff, if redundancies are inevitable, and I think you accept that they are, how are you going to decide where to make them and, you know, what's the timescale?
Well, we've communicated to the organisation last week, and what we've said is, you know, we're going to spend 6 months working with the organisation on coming up with how the organisation is going to look going forward. So this absolutely isn't a crisis response or any sort of slash and burn. We're absolutely not in that camp. Just to finish off maybe the conversation about finances, you know, selling services I've mentioned and moving our London office from Judd Street, you know, allowed us to build up a strong strategic reserve of about 30 million. We spent 6 million of that last year. We're planning to run a deficit of 6 million this year. So, you know, we still have a lot of financial headroom. We're not doing this as a crisis.
Right.
But equally, it would be prudent for us to do it now and have a look at it to make sure we're setting ourselves up for the future and not finding we're facing into this problem in a couple of years' time. So we're going to spend the next about 6 months working with the organisation and what the future state of the organisation is going to look like, with a view to sort of implementing changes early in the new year of 2025.
So how many redundancies do you think you might have to make?
Well, we don't know that yet. I'm not trying to duck the question. We've been very open with the organisation about a 10% sort of reduction. I've talked about the deficit number this year to you, which again is well known around the organisation. We'll be working with the teams on that and coming up with plans as we get sort of through the autumn this year.
Right, but that's still quite a lot of people. I mean, 10%, I think your employment level is about 1,300, is that right? Somewhere in that region. That's a lot of people possibly losing their jobs. And as you and we are often reminding people, only around 1 in 4 blind people of working age have a job. And part of your mission is to protect the employment position of visually impaired people. How are you going to square that circle if you have to make people who'll have the most difficulty getting new work redundant?
Well, first of all, we're not there yet with our teams. We'll be working on this with the teams consulting, as I say. It's too premature for me to give you precise numbers now or areas because we're not there yet. I am proud, actually, of the work we've done as Yarra and IB in improving employment opportunities for blind and partially sighted people out in the UK. You know, we've run an internship programme with Thomas Poplington Trust that's got 50 visually impaired staff into work through that internship programme. And we've been signing up employers across the UK into our Visibly Better employer standards. And last year, we got about 700 visually impaired people into work. So, you know, our track record on employment recently has been quite good. There's more to do. We think there's, you know, over 10,000 visually impaired people in the UK who want to work, who are looking for work and aren't in work. And part of the RNIB is going out and making that case externally so we can get more people into work.
But
and
Matt,
so
I have
we'll
to,
see that carry on, Peter.
I have to tell you that there's a persistent feeling among the many visually impaired people that we hear from and talk to that when this kind of things happen, it's visually impaired staff who tend to be first out of the door, and that the jobs never seem to go from the top of the organisation, they go further down. What do you say to that?
Well, that won't be the case in this. I mean, we're looking at the whole organisation from the top down. No one is exempt, including senior people. I've made that very clear, and we'll be carrying on making that very clear in our communication to the organisation. And, you know, clearly communicating thoroughly and often to the organisation is something we'll be doing a lot of as we go through the next few weeks and months. I think, you know, the recent history of employing visually impaired people in the RNIB has been quite a good story. When I joined, we had about 12% of the staff were visually impaired. It's now just nudging 17% in a slightly bigger organisation. So we have actually provided employment to more visually impaired people in the RNIB over the last few years.
So why do you think that perception exists? Because I'm not making it up. This is what people say to me.
I don't know, Peter, but what I do know is, you know, the numbers that I've just said are right. And, you know, we can point to quite a proud track record of employing more visually impaired people in the RNIB at the moment than we were employing 5 years ago.
OK, let's try and explore the issue that you raised about generating income and how you get out of this situation. Many people will be surprised that this is happening now, when only 5 years ago the RNIB underwent a major restructuring after something you mentioned. You know, it was told it could no longer run residential care because of serious failures in safeguarding. Wasn't that also the moment to make decisions securing long-term funding? What's gone wrong with the planning?
Well, I don't think anything's gone wrong with the planning. I think what all organisations have been facing into in the last 2 or 3 years has been COVID and the cost of living crisis. The landscape is very different now than it was 5 years ago. Well, no one could have predicted those two things coming, which are clearly linked. We've been doing a lot of work on our fundraising strategy, as I say, and whilst, as I said earlier, income levels plan to be pretty level this year, which is sort of prudent. We are doing a lot to try and drive our fundraising activities through, you know, work we're doing with corporate partners, with funds, with donors, where there's some opportunity there. And we've been trying to drive our enterprises part of the organisation, which is really where all our commercial activity takes place, again, to see that as a source of greater income. So we have been doing quite a bit of self-help, you know, to generate more income and not just carry on doing the same old things as the RNFA used to do. And I think, you know, having a plan this year to be level on the year is both prudent, but also in the broader context of fundraising being difficult, quite a good performance.
I mean, are you down on donations? A lot of organisations for visually impaired people and other charities is telling us that they are.
Well, I say our income is going to be level on a year. We get income from three major sources, from legacies. We get income from in-year sort of individual giving activity and people doing fundraising activity. And we get income from sort of funds, donors, philanthropy, corporate partners. And that's pretty normal for organisations to have maybe those three sources of income. As I say, we also have our enterprises arm, which is where we do commercial activity. I think what is challenging is the individual giving part of fundraising, where I think, you know, people up and down the UK are struggling from, you know, cost of living pressures as everyone is, and finding it difficult maybe to be as generous with their charitable donations as they might have been before COVID and the cost of living crisis hit.
You mentioned a third source of income, which is, you know, some of your what you might call more commercial activities. Your income, as we've said, has been consistently falling year on year. And just to give two examples in that commercial area, in 2019, income from government contracts was almost £14 million. In 2023, just a little over £2 million. And government grants in 2019 stood at almost £2 million. 2023, just over £360,000. That's in the Charity Commission assessment of your work. What's the reason for that?
Well, as I say, our focus is on what the future brings in terms of fundraising. We can see opportunity to drive our commercial activities where we run a retail site, we do consulting, we have a transcription plant up at Gateshead, and all those three parts of what we do commercially give us opportunity to drive growth, which we will be doing. And as I said, you know, we're pushing hard on the sort of funds, philanthropy, donors side of things. So, you know, sort of playing what's in front of us in terms of where the opportunity is, maybe not looking back over time where there were historic sources of income, you know, which might not be like for like and available now. So, you know, as I say, we're very much facing into the future.
Well, is that another way of saying that you're not going to tell me whether any mistakes were made? I'm just wondering why in that area your income fell so much, not so much the grants, but certainly in terms of contracts.
I don't have an encyclopedic knowledge of all the contracts you might have raised there, Peter. I mean, I think, you know, we came out of running certain services. As I say, we came out of some of the regulated services, which would have meant that, you know, sources of funding weren't open to us anymore because we just simply weren't running those services. So I think, you know, there are reasons why those numbers are what you've said in terms of the fall off. I think the focus for the organisation in terms of where the opportunity lies has always been those three things I've mentioned, which is a sort of legacy income, you know, working on the individual giving, you know, this year in, year out fundraising for individuals, and then really trying to drive those partnerships with funds, donors, corporate partners, where the organisation, I think, has a lot of headroom. And I think those three give us opportunity. I say that the very conscious decision we've taken to try and improve our income over the last year has been to see our enterprises division, as I say, all those commercial activities that we do, as being a bit of a sleeping giant. And we put in a lot of focus on trying to drive income there. So there's a lot of self-help going on because, you know, as I've said a few times, it is tough economically and organisations can't stand still and rely on, you know, sort of money to come in and previous sources of income. We've got to work incredibly hard, you know, to help ourselves. And as I say, we're also prudent to know that doesn't all fall in our lap straight away. And that's why this year's income levels have been pegged to be sort of level with the previous year.
Right. As far as most of our listeners are concerned, the thing that they'll be most concerned about are services. Will you be cutting any of your services?
Look, we're a great organisation that provides brilliant services for blind and partially sighted people up and down the UK. Our reading services, our helpline, our sight loss advice services, all we do on education, employment, welfare, technology. I would absolutely expect that we would still be running the vast majority of those services at the end of this transformation programme. It's where we get our insight, it's where we get our connections with blind and partially sighted people, it's where we get our validity. I think what we're looking at is how we can deliver those services. And just to maybe to give you one example of something that's shifted already, you know, we had a talk and support service where we connect blind or partially sighted people who may live alone, might be quite lonely, and get an enormous benefit from talking to peers. And that used to be a very clunky system where we would have a lot of people dialing out and making physical connections. We now use technology to allow people to connect themselves, and that has seen more people use the talk and support service using technology at a cheaper cost. Yes, with fewer staff inside the organisation. That's a change that was made 2 or 3 years ago, honestly, but it's just sort of shows the example about how we might look at services and discharge them a bit differently in the future.
But coming as this does so soon after news of cuts being made by guide dogs and with services provided to visually impaired people by local authorities, for example, such as rehab for newly blind people coming under severe pressure, what can you say to our listeners to reassure them about their quality of life? Because there do seem to be a lot of people having to make cuts in the services, yourself included, because I can't see how you can make all these cuts without cutting some services.
Well, look, we're enormously empathetic to blind and partially sighted people up and down the country. I mean, that's why we're here. It's our raison d'etre. So, you know, we're not doing this to look to somehow diminish and undermine the support that many people, you know, rely on day in and day out. And that's going to be the heart of our consideration as we go forwards. I think what you're seeing from guide dogs, and you can't open, you know, the third sector every day without seeing other charities and other sectors all facing into, you know, what is a tough external environment. And it would be wrong of us just to sort of bury our head in the sand and think this problem will go away, because it won't. So what, you know, the encouragement I give to the listeners is that the RNIB is being sort of prudent and forward thinking in looking at this now and organising itself for the future, so we can continue to be the great RNIB that hundreds of thousands of people rely on year in, year out in the UK.
Can I just finally come back to the people who may be facing losing their jobs? Because they're the people who are going to be sitting worrying about this. Can you give a time scale on that and what the size of those job losses might be?
Well, the timescale to the programme is what I said, I think, earlier, which is we're going to spend the next 6 months till the end of this calendar year to really work out what that sort of shape of the RNIB is going to look like going forwards, and then with a view to sort of implementing early in the new year of 2025. So, you know, that's the programme. And within that, we will, you know, work out where the areas of cost saving look like, and, you know, at the appropriate time, we can talk to staff about any redundancies. But that's, you know, as I said, we haven't done that yet. It will be premature to talk to you about it because we just don't have the detail, and we'll get to that as we work through that 6 month timetable I've just said.
Is this one off surgery, Matt, or a permanent move perhaps to what will have to be a downsized RNIB?
Well, I think what we're trying to come out of this is an RNIB that's punching even more above its weight. You know, what I'm hoping is the RNIB of the future is an organisation that is much more impactive than now, having set itself up to do that. I mean, this is a programme of work which I think will, you know, make the RNIB fit for the future for a period of time. But I think it would be foolish for any organisation to say that there's never going to be any future change. I mean, the world is changing so quickly. It would be foolhardy just to say that we're going to stand still. So this is a programme which, when we get through it, we'll then have a period, I think, of real stability in the RNIB.
Matt Stringer, thank you very much indeed. And obviously, we'd like to hear your views, your comments, your questions about that interview. Next week, we're going to be doing a farewell interview with Cathy Yelf, the CEO of the Macular Society. If you've got a question or a comment you'd like us to put to her before she goes, you can email in touch at bbc.co.uk. Leave your voice messages on 0161 8836 1338. Or you can go to our website for more information, bbc.co.uk/in-touch. From me.